their secret mountain lair somewhere in Colorado. This is the Image Doctors Photography Podcast with your hosts, Jason Odell and Rick Walker.
Hey everyone, I'm Jason Odell.
And I'm Rick Walker.
Welcome back to the Image Doctors Photography Podcast. I hope everyone out there in listener land is doing well. How are you doing, Rick?
I am doing fine.
Sequestered as
mostly
as we are. We got to get out with my camera again. That's going to be a good thing. Play around with more stuff.
Very, very therapeutic.
Yes. Absolutely. Get out there with your camera. Just be safe. What are we going to talk about today? We've got a nice little topic.
Well, yeah, a little bit different thing, and it's on casual photography. Which,
fly, you know, casual,
term,
shoot.
That was the only term we could think of for this.
So I don't know, fly casual.
Yeah, so it's the idea of, you know, sometimes you're out there and you just don't want to have as much equipment. You don't necessarily want to do serious post-processing on your images. Sometimes you want to be able to go to an event and immediately send things out to people. And
I think family
these days, right. And these days, you know, the classic thing, and it remains a good option, is use your phone. Right. And so that's certainly an option, but we're going to talk about some other things that you can do. And it's kind of handling that in-between zone between phone photography and higher end photography, which is kind of what we normally drift to.
Right. And so this is like, you want to bring your quote unquote real camera
of some sort,
of some kind, you know, something that is better than your phone, but you don't necessarily want to, you know, this is not going out and setting up tripods. This is, you're going on a hike with, you know, your spouse or whatever, but you want to take a few nice shots. Or maybe you're just, you know, hey, I got the kids over and I'm taking pictures of them. And I want to use something better than my phone for some photos, but I want to disseminate them quickly. I don't necessarily want to spend a lot of time processing them, at least not anything seriously. Or maybe you're doing something where you're at some kind of event, where you're trying to get photos to someone to post on social media later, you know, in near time. I've done this, you know, where it's like, hey, I want to get some pics as this is going on, so we can kind of, but I don't want to use my phone for that. So what can you do?
And some of this will also apply to situations where you are using higher end stuff, but maybe you're traveling and you don't have a laptop and you don't have all your normal tools. And again, you want to just be able to shoot some photos to friends quickly and easily. And so some elements of what we talked to will apply for that too.
Yeah. Yeah.
So at any rate, that's kind of it.
Yeah, cool. Well, let's start off. I mean, you mentioned like not using the phone. Well, what cameras would you want to use then? I mean, obviously you have to have it, but what are we talking about here?
Well, I can throw out some examples of things that I do, and maybe that can be a starting point. You know, some of the smaller format cameras that we've discussed at times, whether it's, you know, Micro Four Thirds or even some DX format cameras can fall in this realm, like a Z50 or, you know, the Fuji X100 series can be wonderful for this. Mm-hmm. You know, those are things that are appealing to me personally, but the common thing with them is they're small, they're lightweight, they don't take up a lot of space, and, you know, are fairly effortless to shoot, which is kind of nice if you're doing things other than photography, like having conversations and
or that all-purpose Zoom can be, like we talked about last week, you know, even a Z6 with a 24-200, it's not small, but it's not crazy.
No, and there's a lot of shooting power in a pretty small package.
Right.
Put that in a little bag and you're done. I think, even need the bag.
I think, so then, you know, I guess then the question is like, if, you know, we both shoot traditional, I guess we should back up for just a moment and just say, you know, traditionally, how do we shoot? Well, we shoot raw, we shoot, and then we come home. We typically download images directly to our computer, you know, whatever that might be, mm-hmm. and you put them into, say, Lightroom or wherever, and you go through and you pick out your selects, and then you meticulously edit those, you know, and you have some keepers, and that's what you're doing. Mm-hmm. Camera settings don't matter too much because you're shooting raw, so you're going to change, you're going to play with those settings. You're not really worried about what you might consider the out of camera as shot look.
Mm-hmm.
Where when you shoot casually, I think you're almost thinking about not limiting yourself to, but it's almost like a JPEG workflow, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, not to say that you have to only be that you're not shooting RAWs as well, because that's a thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there's a couple things you can do where you're using JPEGs, and the reason why you would want to think about it as JPEG workflow is because camera settings can establish the overall look. You know, you have portraits or you have mm-hmm. landscapes, and
it could even be a style,
right? Just the way that it looks in camera. Because one of the things you can do would be to either shoot a raw, or you know, I wouldn't ever shoot just raw JPEG only. Although that, I mean, certainly a choice you could make. I mean, even if I was taking pictures of my son's birthday party when he's little, I would still have RAWs, right? But you could shoot RAW plus JPEG. That's one thing you could do. Mm-hmm. And then you would have a bunch of JPEGs that could easily be transferred, you know, quickly to wherever without having to worry about processing. Mm-hmm. And then there's something that you talked about once upon a time too, which is, well, you could shoot RAW, but then you could create JPEGs in camera with the processing. That's mm-hmm. another thing. That's an op. You know, you
as long as your camera has that feature,
right? You create
a lot of them do, not all of them,
right?
There's some strange missing features.
One of the interesting things, at least when I'm shooting more casually, is the idea of being able to download photos directly from my camera to my phone.
Mm-hmm.
And that's made easiest when you have a JPEG.
Yeah.
For a couple of different reasons, right?
Right. But, you know, talking about that, I'll talk about something I specifically do with my Z50, because for me, it's a thing that occupies that space between a phone and a higher end camera. It's a very good example of that. Super light, super small, you know, painless to carry around. But some things I do there that are different than others. One, I'm conscious of the picture control setting, you know, the color profile that I use, and is it really appropriate for what I'm doing? Because that gets baked into JPEGs. Another thing is I actually use, you know, what Nikon calls their automatic delighting feature.
Oh,
that
yes.
will automatically adjust highlights and shadows a little bit. For RAW, I don't want it. It almost just gets in the way of things in a sense. Mm-hmm. But if my goal is to produce some JPEGs, it's not a bad thing, because shadow detail and highlight detail on JPEGs is just harder. You can only finagle them so much, and then things break down on you later.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have that done at the time of shooting, it's not a bad thing. And those are pretty mature functions right now. So they do a good job for JPEGs, and other brands of cameras usually have analogous things. I know Canons and Sonys at the very least do. They call them different names. So that's one thing. The other thing is, I think it's good to just check your sharpening settings and, you know, do a little experiment where you figure out what it takes to get you results that you like. Some cameras have very nice sharpening for JPEGs. I'll just point out Olympus being about the best. Some produce, frankly, horrifying results where they're, you know, the radius is too high, it looks over-sharpened, and just like crud. And unfortunately, our Nikons, I think, fall into that realm with the normal picture control settings. My tip there is dial down the intensity for the normal sharpening and crank up the mid-range sharpening, which is a newer feature.
That's in the picture control. If you customize your picture control, that's an option. You go in that menu, right?
Yeah, but experiment a little bit with it if you want to be able to do anything with those JPEGs.
Right.
And then the other thing I do, and you were hinting at this, is multiple brands have camera apps now that will allow you to automatically trickle out small JPEGs to your phone. And the thing to look for is a camera that has a Bluetooth connection.
Right.
That's the thing that enables this to work. A normal Wi-Fi one won't. And with the Z50, I have it turned on. So as I'm shooting, the camera is automatically sending out smaller emailable photos to my phone.
Right.
So, you know, whenever I look down at my phone, guess what's on there? With the photos I took with the Z50, and I can just email them out like I would, you know, with a photo that was taken on my phone. It's no more painful.
And a lot of time, you know, if you're using your app and it's on, which you would have for the auto transfer. Mm-hmm. So that only works with JPEGs. That's one thing, at least with the Nikon system. You can't auto transfer RAWs. It will auto transfer JPEGs. So you need to have if you want to do that in real time, you need to have the RAW plus JPEG option. And you don't need to save a full size JPEG. It could be JPEG small or JPEG medium or whatever. And even the normal compression, you don't even have to have the, you know, they're going to be completely reasonable because you're talking about a high quality image from the get-go. You know, these are not images that you're necessarily processing stuff. You can transfer raw images with the Nikon app, but you have to establish a Wi-Fi connection. It's a manual process. It doesn't happen automatically.
No, it's a little bit slow. And that's the same with some other brands too. You know, it varies a little bit, but there are definitely others that offer both raw and JPEG. But the trickling out thing is always just smaller size JPEGs.
And as we mentioned in an earlier episode, a while back, those can be geotagged if your app uses if you've got that turned on and check, you know, you have to synchronize the app settings and your camera settings, but you can have that location data embedded into your files, which is pretty nice as well. Because when your photo has location information embedded in it, and let's say you go to upload that photo to a social media site, a lot of times it'll say, oh, it was taken here, and it'll automatically be tagged with the location where you shot that image, just like if it was from your phone.
Yeah, that's a nice thing.
Right.
Go ahead. Beyond that, I was just going to say that if you have JPEGs, you know, that have gone out to your phone or whatever, then you can always do some really quick tweaks, you know, with apps that are on your phone, whatever they are. You know, it's like both of us use Apple stuff. And so we've both tweaked JPEGs with the Apple Photos app, which can handle RAWs, but it's not a great RAW converter.
And it's actually gotten a lot better in the last few iterations. There's so many more things that you can do directly in the Photos app on your phone or tablet that, you know, it has things like structure and, you know, it has a lot more adjustments than it used to have. I'll put it that way.
Yeah.
It's gotten a lot better.
And for sending photos out to friends who are not going to care as much as we do about, you know, our own photos and the way we obsess on them at times, those photos are going to be just great. They're going to see the people they want to see in them or see where you're at and what you're doing.
Right.
And it'll work just fine for that.
And it'll be nicer than a camera phone, you know, photo.
Yeah.
So that's a good thing. Now we do both also use for a little more fun processing we've talked about in the past. Snapseed is still probably my go-to app for editing on mobile for casual editing of JPEG type stuff for either from my cell phone or elsewhere.
Yeah, my view of that one is if you don't have that, by God, download it. Yeah,
it's free.
It's
totally worthwhile.
Yeah, and it's excellent. Everyone I know that I've recommended it to has absolutely loved it. And they use it pretty frequently, actually.
Right. In fact, if that would be the one app I would have, that would be the one app that I would have.
Mm-hmm.
because it's just that good. I mean, there are other things you can do. Like if you're using your phone for photography, or if even if you're doing this this sort of Bluetooth tethered workflow, you know, there are mobile versions of Lightroom, for example. You can do that. That's not usually the way I go, but it is an option as well. And then, of course, you can have your photos, your JPEGs, go up into the cloud storage. You know, it's included with your account. You could have a cloud version, and you can share things that way. And that's a neat way to share things like galleries. You could make an album in Lightroom on your iOS device or your tablet or your Android device, and then it'll give you a shareable link to an album. And I'll do that while traveling sometimes. That's a slightly different workflow. When I'm traveling, I'm oftentimes bringing in raw files directly to my tablet, my iPad, but same concept works with JPEGs. And in fact, you can even activate your phone camera through the Lightroom app on tablets and phones, the mobile version of Lightroom, and you can capture raw photos directly into it if that's what you want to do. I mean, I like that only for the reason that it allows me to have my phone images and my camera images in the same album synchronized back to my computer later on if I synchronize my Lightroom stuff, which is nice, because there are times when I'm traveling where my phone becomes my backup camera. You know, that is my point and shoot, and I want them to be together in the same Lightroom catalog. So that's cool. You know, there's obviously all of the fun apps that you can do on your phones, but I mean, those are, you know, all kinds of things that you can do. But I think that, you know, nowadays, if you're looking, you know, either maybe you want to get a new camera, you know, you're looking at, I think that feature of having a Bluetooth tetherable app to either transfer pictures, even if you don't do it in real time, just be able to bring photos into your tablet or your phone, you know, I did this. I was shooting an event as a courtesy for some local marketing folks here in Colorado Springs. This was last year or two years ago. And I did this. I just set up my, and I was shooting with a D850, but I set it up for RAW plus JPEG. The JPEGs went into my phone, and then I could text over to the person who was doing the PR for the event. I would just sort of text them, here's a bunch of images. And if they wanted to throw them on their Instagram feed or their Twitter feed or whatever they were doing with them, they had them. They didn't need the RAWs, but I had it in case there was something good later that you wanted to go back and work with.
Yeah. You know, just a few other tips that I can think of. You know, we talked about exposure in the past and how exposing for RAW is a bit different than JPEGs. You know, doing this kind of shooting, obviously you use the philosophy that we talked about for JPEGs, where you don't go for the maximum dynamic range, you go for something that looks good straight out of camera, and that's a little bit different. You know, so that's an important thing. You got to watch the white balance a little bit more so you don't end up with something that's weird hues, which are hard to fix with JPEGs. But I've shot this way for entire vacations, you know, and then gotten home and done the raw processing, and it works pretty well. It's not bad for sending photos home.
No, and a lot of times, you know, we live, you know, the way society and the way we're all connected, you know, there is that element of instant gratification. Why did you use your phone? Why? Because I have the pictures in my phone and now I can put it up on my Facebook page or my, you know, wherever, or I can email it to my family while I'm still on vacation and they can just sort of see that we're all having a good time. Instead of, you know, think about the old days, right? You go on your trip, you come back, and then you send off all your film to get processed. And so, you know, 3 weeks later, a month later, there's the pictures from your vacation. So it's not like it's wrong, but it does enable you to do stuff with your, you know, with a DSLR or mirrorless camera, with a compact camera, more of a real time type of arrangement.
One last tip that I'll mention, and it has to do with the styles of images that you pick in your camera. And you know, there's everything from the relatively standard styles to, you know, a bit more saturation and contrast, like a typical landscape profile. Mm. But there are also wilder ones, things that are more Instagram land. That can be valid. The thing I would say for those, you know, one, do a little bit of experimenting up front so you know how those profiles behave, you know, especially with different exposure. But resist the temptation to flip around to all sorts of different styles. If the end goal is shooting a bunch of images off to friends that they'll view at the same time, it doesn't come across well when you have an incredibly mixed bag of different styles. Try to stay a little bit consistent. That would be my advice. It'll just be jarring to see something that looks like very old faded slide film and then suddenly something that looks sharp and vibrant and contrasty. It just, you got to think about those things.
And you can do all that stuff sort of after the fact if you find that you want to make the looks that way. I mean, there's ways to, you know, in whatever processing tools that you use for that album or something. But you got to remember that when you shoot any kind of JPEG workflow, that the JPEG part is what you see is what you get, you know, so you can't undo that. So if you say, oh gosh, you know, that didn't really look good in sepia tone, you know, inverted, you know, kind of thing, you can't go back with the JPEG. You'd be stuck. So resist the temptation, I suppose, is the good advice there.
And send every photo you took.
Oh, right. It is always a good idea. Okay.
Any other things you can think of?
You know, not on this one. And we'll have some more stuff, you know, coming up. We're always looking forward to hearing from our listeners. You know, we are on Facebook, so facebook.com/imagedoctors. We'd love to hear from you for topic requests. You know, get your feedback. Is there a way that you shoot when you're doing casual shooting? What's your approach? Because, you know, just because we do one way doesn't make it the only way. So we'd love to hear the feedback, but that's all I've got.
Okay, good.
All right. Well, so until next time, we hope to hear from you and we'll see you again. Happy shooting.
All right. Bye-bye.